Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet-setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports Podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. I'm so thrilled that this week we have on one of my heroes since I was in college. I mean, I can't believe we're going to talk to him. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, former NBA player, pushed out of the league for being a man of conscience. And I look forward to speaking to him. He's got an autobiography out called In the Blink of an Eye, which is available at KaepernickPublishing.com and everywhere books are sold. It's co-authored with Pulitzer Prize winner Nick Childs. The foreword is by our friend Howard Bryant. And I just couldn't be more excited to speak to him. So let's get him on the line right now. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. So, Mahmoud, I'll start right away with you. I've already given you a big old introduction and, you know, and give props to Nick Childs and Kaepernick Publishing and all the rest of it. But my question for you is, it's been a quarter century since your life changed when you chose to challenge the compulsory patriotism at sporting events. I'm sure you had offers to write a book in the last quarter century. Why did you decide now to do it?
Timing is everything. I believe, Dave, that I finally was able to put my thoughts into words in a coherent way, right? To put them into context. And then when I look at all that's happening now with what happened to Kaepernick, you know, social political movements of athletes. And then that place, the countless speaking engagements that I go on and just hearing from the public, how they feel that, you know, felt that this is a story they felt needed to be told. So putting all those things together, I said, you know what, the timing is now.
Mm. Now the title In the Blink of an Eye is extremely interesting. Could you speak about the title, please?
You know what? I actually didn't come up with it. It was brought to me, but immediately when I heard it, I said, wow, I love it because, you know, life happens. Things happen fast, you know, and when, you know, we always say that, you know, I look at my career, for example, coming out of LSU, and I remember saying to myself when I was there, I said, man, it seems like it's all happening too fast, right? But also, you know, you correlate that to my game. You know, they said, well, hey, he had a, you know, a quick trigger. But also you look at the other side of it as well. Sometimes all it takes is one thing, you know, one statement, you know, one choice that could also change it in the other direction. It could happen that fast. Mm. So that's why I ended up saying, you know, let's go with that. Let's go with that title.
I mean, a quarter century ago, did you ever think we'd be just discussing the choices you made in 2022? I mean, did you think that this was going to reverberate, or were you just in the moment?
You know what? Yes and no. And I say that because, I mean, with me, you never know if you're going to be here. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you study history, you know, there's always this space with, it seems, activism when it comes to athletes or what have you. So, you know, you're familiar, I'm sure, with all of them, the Muhammad Ali's, the Tommy Lee's, John Carlos's. And because there's always these issues. And at some point, an athlete, an entertainer, somebody's going to say something and do something. Mm. So, yes, but I didn't know I was going to be here to experience it.
Hmm. Why do you think it is that athletes, as opposed to, say, you know, like movie stars or even musicians, are able to have this impact on society, and that, you know, you have this discernible tradition that, as you said, runs through the Muhammad Ali's, Tommy and John, and straight through yourself and into Cap and the women of the WNBA? I mean, there's so many examples that you can throw down with. Why do you think it is that athletes have that political tradition?
Man, that's a great question. That's never been asked of me. But if I'm shooting for an answer right now, I look at the terrain that we're in. You know, we're competitors. We're constantly banging and fighting. The type of grueling, the type of abuse we put our bodies through. And I think at some point, I say this all the time. I said, man, I'm not going about to train like this. And these near-death experiences, and then come out on the court and just let you do whatever you want to do. So when I look at that, maybe that at some point it correlates, because they say sports, all the things you learn in athletics, these qualities you take, you know, outside of athletics, you know, the competitiveness, the sacrifice, the discipline. So Bruce Lee, and I say this, he has a story about a protege. And you say, let's run. He didn't want to run. They ended up running. He added 2-3 miles to it. The man's about to die. Bruce A. died in. Mm. Then he got mad. He started running. And after they finished, he said, why were you so hard on him, Bruce? He said, because once you give up in life, there are carryovers, right? You know, you give up on your family. So with sports is that way. You know, so at some point, I think, you know, say, you know what? I'm tired of just playing the game, you know, and pretending. I don't like the way that feels. So maybe that's a part of it. I don't know, but that's a good question.
And that's a great answer. It reminds me of, I once asked this former NFL player, Dave Megacy, a similar question, and he answered very similarly to what you said. He said, hey, we're athletes, we hate to lose.
Yeah.
Which is basically what you said as well. It's like when you have that level of competitiveness and you see injustice, I guess you're going to go after it in a very dangerous way. And
for sports, it's, you know, in acting, I don't know the acting world. I know there's improvising there, mm-hmm. but in sports, there's a whole lot more of it. You know, it's not like a script. I have lines and I say, you never know. You have plays, but you never know what the game is going to give you. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're always trying to strategize and find a way to conquer your opponent. So it's that mindset of, hold on, one, I don't want to be conquered. And if I feel like you're doing that, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so it's about, let me see if I, you know, can bring about a change this way or that way. So I think there's a correlation there.
Mm. You know, I think a question that you should ask every author is, who are the authors that inspire you? Either political theorists, it doesn't have to be any particular type, but just someone who's written word makes Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf say, you know, this is how you do it.
Man, there's so many, Dave. You know, I have a mentor. I love his writing, Muhammad Alassi. But, you know, man, I can, you know, Noam Chomsky, I like his writing. I like Arundhati Roy's writing. Randall Robinson, Kwanzaa Kwunjufu, Amos N. Wilson. Howard Zinn. There's so many. Oh, my, I'm afraid I'm going to miss some people. You know what I mean? It's just a laundry list. Israel Shahak, you know, he has a lot of, you know, information out there that I really love. So, man, just a host. Mm. And that was something for me. I'm glad you asked that question. You know, when I became a Muslim, man, my whole dynamic in terms of the people that were inspired me began to change. You know, initially it was athletes when I was younger, the Dr. J's, you know, all of that. But then when I started reading more and I'm fascinated by how people think, like, man, how did he come up? How did she come up with that idea? And how was she able to transition, make it so, you know, so coherent and make sense? And it was just fascinating to me. You know, not only was I learning, but I was being amazed at just how people are able to put that on paper and make it make sense. That's why when I look at comedians nowadays, I hardly ever laugh because I'm looking, I'm like, wow. I love the way they put that together. And, you know, I'm more fascinated in that. And it's just amazing to me.
I hear you. You know, most people who achieve this consciousness that you represent do it with the aid of a mentor, a teacher, a professor, in some cases, a parent. Who for you were the people that really rose you up?
All of those authors I just mentioned? No, seriously, it doesn't have to be necessarily always a physical person. Mm. That's a person that wrote ideas on the paper that, you know, that you're receiving information from. But the Muhammad Alassis were definitely one of them. Salahuddin, Imam Musa, and literally on the road, I don't remember all of their names. My best education for me literally happened when I was in the NBA, when I traveled. After I became Muslim, because people would come, and not everybody that I met were Muslims. You know, I had a professor at LSU. I can't remember his name. It was political science class. Man, I loved he invited me to his home. I loved the way he talked, you know, and the way he explained things. And so all of these people were mentoring me. They were handing me information, but they were also giving me lists of books to go get. Mm. And so that was literally the things we talked. Some of them had different disciplines. Some of them were good in history. Some of them were good in, you know, other political science, religious studies. And we would sit up for hours and talk, and I would just try to consume everything I possibly could. And then I'd go out and get the book and I started reading. And then that's when, you know, the shift began to happen drastically for me. Mm-hmm. And you come across, you know, these sayings like Arundhati Roy, once you see something, you can't unsee it. To be silent, to say nothing, is just as political an act as speaking out. Either way, you're accountable. Then you come across, you know, hey, stand up for justice, even if it's against yourself. And just so many, you know, so many, I'm like, whoa. And these are great leaders, great thinkers saying this. And these are people we admire, right? Now that they're dead, we admire them. I'm like, no, my goodness. You know, so I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. That's where it's at. These people talk like with a sense of freedom. Like they could care less. They were so comfortable with the truth. I don't care about, no, I'm delivering this. They were comfortable. And I admired that because that's not what I had. And I wanted it. you know, for myself, you know. So, yeah, huge influences.
You know, let's talk about the book, because I want people to purchase and read this book. If folks are short on money, I want you to go to your library and ask them to purchase this book. I mean, it's so terrific. One of the things about the book is you go through your childhood, which is an incredibly wrenching and powerful story. And as I was reading it, I was like, I know what question I want to ask Mahmoud. I want to ask, how did growing up as you grew up and being, you know, the size that you are, like, what gave you the audacity to think that you could be you?
You know what? I was blessed, Dave, to, you know, I had my doubts like most people. You know, you question yourself. But at the same time, too, I grew up, you know, and I credit my grandmother, aunt, and uncle more than anything, because they kept me at that time in the church. And they kept me believing in someone bigger than myself, a being bigger than myself. And that being had the power to change your destiny. You know, so for me as a little boy, I would constantly pray a lot, you know, even though I had my insecurities and doubts, but I prayed a lot. And the more I moved toward what I was praying, I started to see, like, hold on, I'm making some headway here, right? There is something here. I just have to keep working on it and developing it. And that's something that eventually, and then it's what you consume. Like, I was so determined. All on my walls, I got Dr. J and Michael Jordan, and this is what I'm consuming every day. This is what I'm dreaming. I'm, you know, as they say, so as you think it, so shall it be, right? So I'm starting to put all of those things in motion. And as I'm doing that, you hear things, you feel things like, wow, this was a little easy to do than the last time, right? And then as it goes, you develop confidence along the way. You say, hold on, man, I think I'm onto something. I think this is something that I can do. You know, I have natural, I'm quick. I can compete athletically with anybody. And so I just have to choose. And then I have to believe. So, I was also, Dave, I mean, at that age, it was also an issue of life and death for me. So that was something that, you know, people talk about this concept of, you know, I don't like to use the word fail, but yeah, you know, afraid to fail. And so that was a part of it. I don't want to fail, and I don't want to work at a 9-to-5. And I, you know, and you have visions and dreams of doing stuff. And so a part of it, man, was that too. It's like, you know, I don't know what I'm gonna do. If I don't make it in basketball, my life is over. This is all I got. There was no B or C option. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have an attitude. You know, it's like, man, this is between me and you eating. Mm-hmm. And I developed that in the fourth grade. Mm. You know, so that's what got me up in the morning. So that's what created the audacity, mm-hmm. you know, and the grit.
Yeah, the grit is the word for it. Was the community supportive, you know, realizing the talent in their midst, or was it more like, look at you, what makes you think you can do this?
A combination of both.
Okay.
I heard, man, nobody's really ever made it. Until I found out, okay, you had the Purvis Short brothers and all of that, but oh, nobody's ever really made it, and you're too small. I heard it, but I also had people like Pop, we call him Pop, and Benny, and other people, and they would come to me, Doc, you know, keep it up, and then Boo, Cooper, and all of those guys, when I'm in the fourth grade, we got him, first pick, and giving me the rock, and motivating me, so it was a mixture of both of them.
Mm. You know, you write, and obviously you speak so passionately about hoops, and you know that connects with me on a really deep level. When you took your stance, did you ever think for a second that they would try to take it away from you? That was at risk, that was on the table?
Yes and no. The no is because there's a part of me, obviously, I'm always trying to think the best of human beings. Mm. I know we have a bad side. You know, so I'm like, look, man, I'm a people's person. You know, I'm approachable. And what I'm saying is true. It's not true, right? It's not like I'm saying something just really ridiculous. You can back this stuff up. So part of that reason, you know, I'm like, it's not going to get to the level. But history, of course, you know the examples of it happening. So it was a combination, yes and no. I wasn't surprised when it did happen. And at the same time, I was prepared for it because I'd already made my mind up. I can remember being on the balcony one time and I was on the phone. I say, man, I just became Muslim, changed my name. Uh-oh, what about your endorsements? I said, I can care less about endorsements. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that. That's not why I did what I did. Become a Muslim. So I'm saying that to say all of these reasons, I'm not surprised because I know that's a possibility, but that's not my reason is because I want to live a life the best I can, as true to myself as I can, with what I believe. And I want to stand up to that because most of my life I hadn't. I've been conditioned because we grow in a culture where we're conditioned to just play the game. Don't hurt people's feelings. You might lose your job. You might lose this. I don't want to live like that. And so at that moment, I said, you know what? I'm working toward getting to the point where I'm free, like literally, that I'm going to live with this free conscience and free soul. And and I got to work toward that. And that's when I start taking those steps. And so that's how it came about. So I wasn't concerned, Dave, with losing anything, because this is just my humble opinion. You can't give whatever God has for me. You can't keep it from me. And whatever he don't have for me, you can't give it to me. You might think you can. It's the projection of you having that power, but it ain't real power, right? Mm-hmm. So I say, it is what it is. I'm going to just keep walking my way. And if I got to go through this test of losing, right, and suffering, look, great. And I'm not saying I'm a leader, but you know, you had people, everybody, look, that took those positions, they've gone through that. If it means that much to you, you know, like you say you do, you're going to take that risk. And I'm still doing it, and I don't have any regrets for it. Mm. And I'm comfortable with it. And I'm also that person, Dave, look, if I throw something out there, and I've learned that too, like, listen, I know I'm not going to always be right. But if it's something I feel is correct and I believe it, I'm going to throw it out there. Mm. And that's the only way you're going to know what people think. Now, if you throw something back at me and it makes sense, I don't have arrogance. I don't have the pride like I'm going to deny it anyway, right? I'm going to say, you know what? I'll submit to the truth if it makes sense to me. And so I wasn't concerned with that at all.
Wow. I'm concerned with that. How much did it matter to you about whether or not other NBA players had your back or didn't have your back, like in your consideration of it, the union as well? Like, who had your back?
The answer to the first question, it mattered and it didn't matter. Okay. It mattered because, you know, you would think, right, when you're going out there like that, especially if, like a lot of us, for example, in particular, you already know, football and baseball, basketball, predominantly black, right? So a lot of us come out of the similar socioeconomic conditions. We've experienced similar or the same things. So, and we have these conversations on the buses, on the planes, constantly. So when this happens and you don't see that, it's like, wow, really? You know, it's saddening more than hurt. You expect it because of the conditioning over the years and what we just talked about. But it still hurts because you want to see people, like if you had some knowledge and you felt it was correct, you want to tell people and you want them to feel the same way about it. But you understand that people won't. But it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt because of your love for wanting to see certain people at, in certain places in their consciousness, mm-hmm. right? Not that you don't have it all, but on the other end, it doesn't bother you because my thing is, look, it's about the truth, whether you like it or not, mm-hmm. right? If it resonates, take it. If it don't, I can't control what you accept and what you don't. All I can control is myself. Mm. And we all gonna have to answer when it's all said and done, when our careers are over, when our life is over. You know, I don't want regrets. That's one of my greatest concerns, being on my deathbed. And figuratively, if I could literally see God and God is communicating with me and he says, Mahmoud, what do you have left? I want to be able to say, I don't have nothing left. I gave you everything. I use everything you gave me. And so I don't want to have those regrets like, man, I should have stood up for this. I saw that. I should have said something about that. And I didn't. And we know as human beings, you know, I know when we hear something, we see something and it ain't right. And we don't do anything about it. We can try to hide it as long as we want. We know at that moment we were cowards. Mm. And you got to live with that. You go to sleep. And that started pricking my I'm like, man, I don't like the way this feels at all. And I wanted to get rid of it. And so that's, and I know, like everything, if you want to be great at it, what do they tell you? Practice. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's when I started learning how to tell people no, throwing stuff out there. Oh, and feeling the discomfort of, darn, well, he said this or she said this. I ain't like the way that felt. And you get used to that, just like the game of basketball. Somebody cross you over, dunk on you. Oh, man, okay, I'm going to come right back at you. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's been that process for me and how I've been navigating through it.
Wow. You've been so generous with your time. I don't see how anybody can hear you and not want to go deeper and read this book in the blink of an eye.
That's nice.
No. I mean, it's just like to hear you speak is like makes you want to read this book. But I'd be remiss to let you go if I didn't ask you just one piece of fluff here.
All right, let's do it.
I got to ask you some fluff because I do love this game. The game has changed. So two-part question. Do you like today's game compared to when you played?
You know what? I like it, but it's different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I do like it. Not always. I mainly watch it, Dave, if I'm watching it and it's competitive, they're going at each other, I'll stay tuned. When I feel that they're just kind of going through the motions, I can't watch it. And so most of the times I watch it, obviously, it's playoffs. You know, but I mean, I love the fact that guys are, you have all of these different 6'9", 6'10", they're handling the rock, they're cutting, they're passing, they're shooting the three, finishing. That's the way basketball, I mean, when it's all said and done, you should have that type of skill level. I don't like the fact that there's so many, it seems like there's a concentration on threes. Mm. So when a guy go in, he'll have a two-pointer and he'll kick it out to the three. You know what I mean? That's like, I'm like, huh? And that's other things, but I love the skill level of what I'm seeing, how skillful these guys are. And even when I was younger, I felt that way. When I would go overseas and I would see big guys in guard drills and big guys, that's what I was trying to convince people when I was young. I'm like, why are you telling this guy? No, you just go to the post. What if we need him? What if he's playing Shaq and he's like 220 and Shaq is 300 and something. You ain't posting Shaq up. You want to take Shaq out, put it on the floor. But if you don't have those skills, you can't do that. So you want to prepare for every scenario. But anyway, I love that part of it.
Mm. And how, you know, people know this era, far less hand checking, far less physical, pace and space. How would 25-year-old Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf do in today's game compared to when you played?
You know, well, with the right coach, not trying to put handcuffs on you, I definitely believe in my abilities. It would be, in a sense, easier because they don't have the hand checking. You know, when you can't hand check, it's like shooting practice, especially if you're quick. and you can get, you know, you get your shot off. It's like, especially using a pick and roll. So definitely, I believe it would have been a whole different ball game.
I think.
And with Golden State, they don't even have a green light; they have a fluorescent light. And so, you know, as a player, when you have, you take your freedom and have your freedom, the goal is no longer here. The goal is here. Well, shoot, with Golden State, that fluorescent light, the goal looks like this. It's a whole different level.
Yeah, not just saying this. I think you'd be a 28-point-a-game Lillard-esque statistic guy.
I love Lillard.
Yeah, it's a similar.
He don't waste a lot of dribbles when he go into his move. He don't over dribble a lot.
That's right. Yeah,
and that's another thing I don't like about the game. You got guys and they're. I'm like, man, come on, get your shot off quick or pass the ball.
Exactly. Keep moving it. You know this, that part of the story of you releasing this book is that it's on Kaepernick Publishing, of course, started by Colin Kaepernick. Why was that important to you?
You know what, man? We have, our stories are similar. You know, what happened to me, what happened to him. I thought it was just a great marriage. You know, so many similarities in our stories. And also, you know, Cap Publishing, I think by far, I don't know about others, but for what I'm hearing, has the best deals, you know, for authors, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to publishing. And so that was definitely a selling point as well.
Wow. And I ask this of everybody who comes on the show, and I'm actually particularly curious what your answer will be. What music are you listening to right now?
Oh, wow, man. I'm always listening to some old school, but I don't know if you know anything about Van Hunt. You know anything about Van Hunt?
I don't.
Oh, man, you got to get with him.
All right. Downloading.
You know, I still listen to a lot of old stuff, man. I listen to Women and Men. I listen to Adele. You know, I got Van Hunt. I mean, I listen to there's a woman I like Algebra Blissett. Man, the list are long. Snow Allegra, you know. It's hard to mention them all now, but yeah, a whole bunch of people.
Van Hunt, I'm just saying this. I mean, he's a Grammy Award winner. He's incredibly established. I'm looking forward to listening to him. He's also married to Halle Berry.
Wow. He is?
Well, it says partner. I don't know if they're married, but that's...
Okay.
I'm just saying, I noticed it when I looked him up. I did a triple take. I was like, wow, a Grammy. Wow. And then it was like, oh, wow.
And I listened to my daughter and my son because they're in the music.
Oh, awesome. Well, the book is called In the Blink of an Eye, co-written with Pulitzer Prize winner Nick Chiles. His name is Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Everybody should get this book, In the Blink of an Eye, available now at KaepernickPublishing.com and everywhere books are sold. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. We'll be back right after this, but first, a quick word from the sponsor of this podcast, The Nation Magazine. Okay, look, the need for independent journalism has never been more important, and The Nation brings it each and every week like they've been doing since 1865. I'm serious. This is what you gotta read. It's The Nation Magazine. Go to thenation.com/subscribe, and please never forget that when you support The Nation Magazine, you are also supporting the continued existence of this podcast. So please subscribe. Go to www.thenation.com/subscribe. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. And now I've got some choice words. Okay, look, when Golden State Warriors superstar Steph Curry received his NBA championship ring on Wednesday night, the crowd roared. But the team captain, instead of basking in the moment, quieted the arena and said, "We want to continue to use our platform and the opportunity to shout out a very special member of the basketball community. Brittany Griner's birthday is today. She's 32 years old. We want to continue to let her name be known, and we pray." Curry then accurately called Griner wrongfully incarcerated in Russia, and in a pointed statement at the Biden administration said, "We hope that she comes home soon, that everybody's doing their part to get her home." This brought Griner much needed attention. She believes she is being forgotten, and that makes Curry's reminder all the more important. But she will need more than prayers. The basketball star facing 9 years in a Russian prison camp for the crime of possessing 2 vape cartridges in her luggage is suffering. According to an article in the New York Times, this world-class athlete is only allowed outside for 1 hour a day. She shares a small cell with 2 other prisoners. Showers are twice a week. Only recently was she afforded a bed that could fit her 6-foot-8-inch frame. The building is stone, so as her attorney, Alexander D. Boykov, told The Times, "When it is hot outside, it's too hot. And when it's cold outside, it's too cold." Arranging calls to her family has proven to be a near impossibility. She has not been able to speak to her parents or her siblings since her February arrest, and only spoken to her wife, Sherelle, twice. Boykov said after visiting Griner, "She has not been in as good condition as I could sometimes find her in. She is not yet absolutely convinced that America will be able to take her home. She is very worried about what the price of that will be, and she is afraid that she will have to serve the whole sentence here in Russia." Secretary of State Antony Blinken says securing the freedom of those imprisoned abroad is his top priority, which also includes another person from the United States imprisoned in Russia, Paul Whelan. And yet the efforts to negotiate her release by former ambassador to the United Nations, Bill Richardson, have reportedly been discouraged by the administration. Richardson is, quote, cautiously optimistic that he can strike a deal to secure their freedom by the end of the year. He has had results in the past freeing U.S. citizens from autocracies. But as The Times reported, U.S. officials have publicly discouraged such private negotiations, saying that they are not helpful to their efforts. This is a standard position of the government in these matters, especially when dealing with a country that has hostilities toward the United States. Yet it's also absolutely the wrong posture. If Richardson can make a deal, then that should be supported and celebrated. If he is full of hot air, a distinct possibility, then let that be exposed by his failure to secure her freedom. Joe Biden says he will speak to Vladimir Putin at the forthcoming G20 conference in Bali only if freeing Griner is the first order of business. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said that they have not received a serious counteroffer to their efforts at a prisoner swap, which certainly implies that Biden's people offered Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout, whose release was previously thought to be Putin's goal in targeting Griner. If Putin is in fact refusing Bout and refusing to even negotiate with the Biden administration, that suggests a far longer road for Griner. This wouldn't just be hostage diplomacy. This would be the gleeful taking of a hostage. Even with Russia's strict drug laws, 9 years for 2 cartridges is unheard of. This has nothing to do with weed, of course. It is the price for the U.S. response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and a price for the global absence of peace. And yes, the U.S. would have a firmer leg to stand upon if it today offered blanket amnesty to every single person being warehoused in our prisons for marijuana possession. Now, one fascinating detail that emerged from the interviews with her attorneys is that Griner is passing the time by reading Dostoevsky's profoundly depressing novel Demons, the theme of which is that God's existence is affirmed by the presence of suffering. Griner's ordeal brings to mind, however, a quote from perhaps his most famous novel, Crime and Punishment, in which he writes, "Break what must be broken once and for all, that's all, and take the suffering on oneself." The very least we should do is take the words of Steph Curry to heart and continue to hold a candle for Griner, continue to demand that the Biden administration do all it can, including the use of private negotiators, and take Griner's suffering as our own. We'll be back right after this with a quick word from Edge of Sports. Hey, everybody out there. This is Dave Zirin with the Edge of Sports podcast. People got to know that we put this podcast on with elbow grease and bubble gum on a weekly basis. And we're proud of the work that we do. We love it, but we can't do it without support from you, the listener. So please go to patreon.com/edgeofsportspod and support the podcast. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. Any little bit you might give to support the podcast actually makes a huge difference to the work we're trying to do. That's patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. We appreciate you. Make no mistake about it. And now, back to the Edge of Sports podcast. And now it's time for the Just Stand Up and Just Sit Your Ass Down. The Just Stand Up Award
Stand up!
Goes to, I mean, I just want to say her name, Elnaz Rekabi, the Iranian climber who just competed in this past weekend's Asian Continental Championships without a hijab amid the protests in Iran. And Elnaz Rekabi, people were concerned that she had been disappeared, and she is okay. So I just wanted to shout her name out and say how amazing it is that she is all right. And the Iran Olympic chief is saying that there won't be any punishment coming her way. She was met by a cheering crowd when she returned to Iran. And, you know, that's a long way. From people having fears that you are like disappeared. So just very, very glad on that count. The Just Sit Your Ass Down Award. Sit Your Ass Down.
Sit Your Ass Down.
Goes to Dan Snyder. Oh man, the boat is starting to take on water. Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Commanders, is actually being forced out. I mean, not officially, but one guy, Jim Irsay, a made man, if you will, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, said that he thought Snyder should leave. This is Jim Irsay, by the way, someone who was suspended a couple years ago because the police pulled him over and he had like 80 grand in a bag and a bunch of pills. And Jim Irsay has the moral high ground over Dan Snyder. Delicious. So Dan Snyder, it's time to go, man. Sit your ass down. And now we're at the part of the show that everybody loves more than the parts with just me. We're talking about Jacob Zirin, my son, talking to me about various sporting things that are going on in the world. We call it Jake's Takes. Jake, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great, but you're not doing super great because where are we right now?
Oh, we are currently in urgent care.
Why are we in urgent care?
Because I got injured playing football.
Yes, and so it's not his head, it's not his back, but we are going to check out his shoulder. So moving away from that subject to something much more exciting and fun, the National Basketball Association. So the first question I have for you, Jacob, looking at this NBA season, are the awards.
Okay.
Who do you like for MVP for the 2022-23 season?
You know, there are a lot of very good candidates for this award, you know. You know, there's Jokic, there's, you could pick Steph. There are a lot of great options. I don't know why I just said those two specifically, because there are a lot of really good ones. But the man I'm going to go with Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I think the reasons for that are self-explanatory. So let me just ask you real quick. Do you have a dark horse candidate? Somebody you think could emerge who nobody's talking about? I have one. As you think about that, I think Jaylen Brown could emerge and be an MVP candidate. I also think Karl Anthony Towns could emerge and become an MVP candidate. What about you, Jake?
I never picked this. We never did dark horses.
Oh, okay. Well, let's cut out the dark horses section. Who do you like for rookie of the year?
You know, I like a lot of rookies in this draft class. You know, you have Jaden Ivey out of Purdue, currently at Detroit. I like him a lot. Paolo Banchero looks really good. He looks really good. Jabari Smith, you know. Chet Holmgren's out for a while, right?
The year.
But I'm picking none of those very good candidates, as I'm going to pick, out of Iowa, Keegan Murray.
Ooh, I love that pick.
I'm picking Keegan Murray because I think he has some of the biggest upside out of this entire class. I think he's really good.
Well, I love the Keegan Murray pick. Uh-huh. Just, you know, not that you need my approval, but I think it's a great pick. All right, coach of the year, who do you like?
I like Chris Finch from the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Great pick.
I love that team this year. You know, they acquired Rudy Gobert in the offseason, so I think it was a really good trade for them because I think Cat likes the four more. I think he'll work better at the four. All around, I think that team is going to succeed. That's why I'm picking Chris Finch as my coach of the year.
Great pick. Cat, for those of you not in the know, is Carl Anthony Towns. Get it? K-A-T.
I mentioned Anthony Edwards.
Ooh, the Ant-Man.
It'll be amazing this year.
We'll take it to another level, I bet. All right, who do you like for most improved player?
Most improved player. You know, there are some people who I was really considering. This was a really hard one for me to pick because I had a lot of guys who were like, oh, should I pick him? Should I pick him? Should I pick him? But I ended up picking Jalen Brunson.
Oh.
He is in a completely new offense, completely new team. He doesn't have Luka Doncic taking his shots. It's him. And then it's like a bunch of people who aren't really scorers besides like RJ Barrett. So I think he could really shine. I think he's going to do really well there. I think he's going to end up winning most improved player.
Wow. You know, another player on those Knicks who had a very good first game, wouldn't it be cool if he won, that was Cam Reddish.
Did he?
Oh, he hit a three to tie the game, like, oh, at the buzzer. Nice. It was dope.
Also, like, you could say Julius Randle is, like, a good offensive player, but I didn't really
want to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone there. Yeah. Okay. I think he is what's called a millstone around the neck of a team.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's it. Oh, no, Depoy, last one, defensive player of the year.
I am going to pick the guy who has won a Depoy in the past, who will win many Depoys in the future, who is one of the best defensive players in this league right now. He is also my MVP pick, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
The double only ever accomplished by Michael Jordan?
Of course.
Oh, and Giannis, too, I think, did it the year he won MVP.
Yeah, he did.
So that's the only two. So if he does it again, that would be so sick. I do love that team. Let's hear your 1-8, because who's going to make the playoffs? We're forgetting about the play-in. That's the 9 and 10 seed.
Oh, but we didn't write down play-ins.
Forget the play-ins.
Nobody cares about the play-ins.
No one cares. Who's your top 8 in the West?
You know, there are a lot of really good teams in the West this year. A lot of teams on the rise. A lot of teams on the rise. So, should I go from 8-1 or 1-8? What do you
go
think?
Go 8-1.
8-1. Okay, so in the 8 seed, a little bit of a shocker, but they're healthy this year. They're going to look good. They're going to look scary. I have the Portland Trailblazers.
And I think
you have a healthy Damian
people.
Lillard.
Mm-hmm.
You have a healthy Anfernee Simons. You have Josh Hart. You have Yusuf Nurkic. You have Jeremy Grant. That is a good starting five.
Mm-hmm.
Those are five above average or better players.
Mm-hmm.
That is going, it's going to be a good team. Their bench also is kind of solid. I think they'll end up sneaking in, getting that 8 seed.
7.
7, I have the Dallas Mavericks. They're going to end up making it in somehow. There are just better teams ahead of them, you know? There's nothing else to really say. They lost Jalen Brunson in the offseason. They gained Christian Wood, which I thought was a nice pickup. So we'll see how it plays out, but I have them in the 7 seed.
You know what they used to call me when I played on the courts?
What did they call you?
Jewish Wood.
Jewish Wood.
As opposed to Christian Wood.
It's a nice nickname.
Get it?
I do.
Well, that was pretty funny. Number 6.
Number 6, I have a team who has one of the best players in the league, a team with a lot of really good players around him. Just, there are better teams ahead. The Denver Nuggets.
Wow.
I don't think
surprised you have him that low with Jamal Murray coming back.
Yeah, well, I do, because there are better teams ahead of them. What can I say?
Well, let's talk about one of those teams. Number 5.
Number 5, I have the Memphis Grizzlies. I have them at actually a bit of a fall off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to be as good as last year. I think that John Morant will he'll pump the brakes a little bit, but they're still going to be a good team. Don't sleep on them. I'm not sleeping on them. They're going to do great in the playoffs. We'll see how it plays out.
Number 4.
This is where it gets really tough because you have a lot of really good teams, my last four. It was really hard to pick these four seeds. But at number four, I can't believe I'm saying this. I have to go with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Wow, you have the T-Wolves ahead of the Mavs, yeah. The Nuggets, yeah, the Grizz.
That's my coach of the year right there. So actually, that's true. I should have him higher. I really should, but I don't. But there are just better teams ahead.
Number three.
My favorite team this year. I love this team. My favorite player of all time is on this team. Injured players coming back. It's the Los Angeles who? Clippers or Lakers?
I certainly hope it's the Clippers.
It's the Clippers.
Oh, jeez, because the Lakers look like hot booty on a stick.
Uh-huh.
Number two.
Have them in the playoffs.
No.
Love John Wall. He's going to be great this year.
Oh, my goodness. Quick prediction stats. Points and assists for John Wall.
16. 6.
Okay.
4.
Ooh.
1.5. 1 steal, 0.5 blocks. On 44, 31, and 80 splits.
Nice. Wow, you really went into it. All right, so who's number two then?
Number two, we are down to the last two teams.
I already disagree with one of these teams, even though I don't know who one and two are going to be.
Well, just so you guys know, my one seed is actually my father's 8 seed. It's his 8 seed. Very crazy to me.
Damn.
Two, I have the Golden State Warriors. Love that team. Love Steph. They did get, of course, in that altercation.
Mm-hmm.
Team chemistry might be taking a little plummet, but I think they're still going to be really great. Number one, the Phoenix Suns.
I can't believe it. They're going to fall off like bell-bottom jeans in the 80s.
Okay. Well, I would love to see that. Let's see that.
Let's make it interesting right now. Will they be – this is a good bet. Will they be closer to the 8th seed or the 1 seed? In other words, if they finish 4, you win the bet. If they finish 5, I win the bet.
I would bet like $200.
Hey, it's not a money bet.
Oh.
Dishes for a week.
Dishes for 4 months.
No. Too rich for my blood.
What?
I can't do dishes for 4 months. It's too much. How about 2 weeks of dishes?
2 months.
1 month?
1 month.
1 month of dishes. If they finish 5 or less,
Okay.
I win. If they finish 1 through 4, you win.
This is such an easy bet.
This is such an easy bet. For me. For me. For me.
For me.
Let's go to the East. Who do you like?
Casuals. I hate casuals.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I do hate casuals.
In the East. The 8th seed. A team that has been good for many years. They were great at one point. The Toronto Raptors.
Okay, interesting. I'll wait for the Wizards. I have them as my 6th seed.
See, look at these casuals. They're my favorite team, and I don't even have them in here.
Casuals who like the Raptors at 8. Number 7.
I have the Atlanta Hawks.
Ooh.
Most
people are picking them higher than 7.
Yeah, because of that acquisition.
Acquisition. It's okay.
Acquisition of DeJounte Murray. It's putting them up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them at 7.
Number 6.
Actually, yeah, 7. Number 6. Wait, where did you have the Celtics?
The Celtics?
You had them at 8.
I had them at 7 or something.
Yeah, that's really crazy. Number 6, I have the Brooklyn Nets. They are not that good of a team.
No. But they all hate each other and the coach.
But they have KD and they have Kyrie and they have Ben Simmons. So they have to do something. So 6 is where they are.
That team is very good for Brooklyn. A lot of people in their 20s who hate their jobs. Zing!
Number 5. The Boston Celtics, who indeed. This guy has at 8.
Damn.
I don't know why you made him drop so low after just losing their head coach.
Because they lost their coach.
I know losing their head coach, you know, it means a lot to a team. But this is still the 2-seed Boston Celtics from last year.
And they got Malcolm Brogdon.
They didn't really lose anybody.
And they got Malcolm Brogdon.
And they have Malcolm Brogdon now.
Everybody
I really should have them actually at 4.
Okay, have them at 4. Okay. Celtics at four, and who's your
Sixers
five?
Sixers at five.
Horribly coached team, the Sixers.
Yeah. Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers.
Doing a horrible job already.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid got booed in their home or their second game. Yeah. Go for it. Now we got number three. I think I know who your three is going to be, and it makes me really happy.
My favorite team in the East this year, not including my Washington Wizards, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, I love that pick. What do you like about them?
I love Darius Garland. I love Donovan Mitchell. I love Jared Allen. I love that entire
Evan Mobley
team. Evan Mobley. Well, I don't like Evan Mobley that much.
Oh.
But I love that team. And I love their coach. And I think that they are going to do really well in the regular season.
Number two.
Number two. I have the horrible haircut. Sorry. Horrible haircut led Jimmy Butler led Miami Heat.
Ah, good pick. They're solid. They always will be. Number one.
I have the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yep, Giannis. No going ham.
Uh-huh.
I just realized something. In your Western picks, you didn't have a team that I'm probably the highest on to make a leap, the Pellies, the New Orleans Pelicans. Are you not really feeling them?
Nah, I'm not.
Wow. You think there's going to be injury issues? Because if they have a healthy Zion, they're going to be tough.
I think they're going to be an odd seed.
CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram. We'll see.
Well,
those are the NBA picks, and thank you so much for that, Jacob, I must say. Well, that's all the time we have on this week's show. Thank you so much, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Thank you so much to the producer of this podcast, David Tigaboo. You know, y'all could support us on Patreon. That's all I'm saying. Patreon.com/edgeofsportspod. Support the pod. For everybody out there listening, though, we love you. Stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.